is Cougar Sports Saturday.
It's complete and another touchdown!
Cougar Sports Saturday. Saturday. A presentation of KSL Sports. KSL
Sports. Left wing for three.
He got it again!
BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans for Cougar fans. Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. On Utah's legacy home of the Cougars. KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Hour number two off and running here on Cougar Sports Saturday. We're here live downtown Salt Lake City, Utah. Just across the street from us is the NCAA tournament. Arizona, they took down Dayton today here in the Delta Center. So Arizona moving on, future Big 12 team. They took down Dayton 78-68. We're going to see the Kansas Jayhawks and Gonzaga Bulldogs in a game, which probably, maybe I'm just sounding sour grapes because I'm ticked about what happened Thursday, but should have been BYU in the Delta Center.
Yes.
Does that kind of eat at you too? That BYU had to go to Omaha. They had to go, you know, a different time zone when, you know, make it work and put BYU in Salt Lake, please. They deserved it.
Absolutely. It adds to it because BYU would have won that game with the fan support behind them. I don't know how it was in Omaha, but it didn't come through the TV as being anything special.
It was basically the travel party of BYU and the parents of the players and family members of the coaches. It wasn't. There was a few. Like, BYU fans always find a way. I was still impressed.
But not in a large enough size to feel like you're replicating any sort of home court momentum.
I was still impressed by the showing, just simply like, wow, in Omaha, Nebraska, there's still pockets of BYU fans in this building. Like, they always find a way. But it was not. It's just hard. You know, March Madness, it's tough to say, oh, I'm going to do a round-trip flight to Omaha and pay $950 on short notice. Like, yep. That's because no one was talking about Omaha, too. All the buzz was Salt Lake, Pittsburgh.
Yep.
Let's go out to the East region, the 6th seed, the BYU Cougars. What? What? Oh, they're playing Duquesne? What? Oh, this is a good thing. This is a good thing. Ken Pom says, they got a ton of favor. Huge favor.
It felt that way.
That huge favor resulted in elbows to the face, physicality, and LeBron
bloody noses,
cheering against you.
Cotton balls in the nostrils.
Man, that blows me away. Like early in that game, when I see Down Hall bleeding, nothing, common foul.
Here's the thing. That was the only common foul review I agreed with because I felt like it was completely an accident.
Sure.
Wrong place, wrong time. Two other times, though, that they went to the monitor, Spencer Johnson getting a massive shoulder to the chest on a rebound, and then the Waterman Drame scrummish.
That being a double tech was insane. I had a perfect view of that. Drame, because, you know, Waterman got a little physical. He had a part in it, but Drame just came with violence back at Waterman and throws a blow at him. And
nothing.
I'm thinking, wow. That was the ultimate tone setter in the second half, too, because Waterman even told me in the post-game locker room, he's like, I was just trying to set a tone for our team that we're going to be physical, because they were called out at the half by the staff, like, you got to be physical. And Waterman's trying to set the tone. Duquesne just said, okay, we see you, and we're going to come back with even more vengeance. That's what it felt like when Drame did that.
And that's poor officiating.
It is, but it should not have been a double tech.
No.
It should not have been a technical on Waterman. And look, as you noted earlier,
so not have a flagrant foul in a game where guys have bloody noses and they have to be attended by the trainers. There's flagrant activity happening. Set the tone. And that's what bothers me so much about college officiating. Set the tone with your officiating. Like yesterday I'm watching the Colorado-Florida game, Mitch. I don't know if you got to watch this because you might have been traveling. So in the second half, there was a stretch where Colorado goes on this long run and their big man was taunting up a storm. I don't know if you know that.
Yes.
Low man, he did the rocking the baby at one point, yes. And then shortly after, what happens? Oh, Florida's coach gets a T because he does a loud clap right in front of the official.
Reminded me of Pope slamming
exactly.
a water bottle.
Exactly. Yep. And guess what? Those 2 points came back to bite Florida. That was not a technical worthy play when there's behavior on the court that's worthy of a higher penalty than a common foul, and that happened in the BYU game. It's all over college hoops, and it drives me nuts because these guys got to take control of the game, and to let Drame just unload on Waterman, that's not taking control. That's letting violence happen on the court, and that's not what basketball is.
One of the best days to travel on the, in the year, by the way, is to travel on a first round day, because on a Delta flight you get TNT, TBS, and CBS. Ooh. It was actually kind of a good flight for once, even though I got a...
You flew out Tuesday night, so you're watching the first four?
No, coming back yesterday.
Oh, coming back.
So I'm watching CBS.
So your consolation for spending all that money and going all that way and having your heart broken is that on the flight home, you get to watch them hoop.
And because I had to have a last-minute flight, I had a filthy middle seat.
Oh!
That was brutal. Oh, man. Gregor Bell's just enjoying Comfort Plus up front. We'll have to maybe ask Mark. I'll say, did you guys book your stuff early? Did you guys book your stuff Friday in advance? He's going to be joining us in hour number three. Yeah, I had a middle seat, but that was the saving grace, was being able to watch the games. But yes, I mean, it's crazy. We talked about it before the show. It's crazy that there's a world where in this same tournament, a game in BYU-Duquesne that felt like a slugfest, an A-10 slugfest out on the East Coast, also in the same tournament has a game where it's 102-100.
Wait, what? In regulation.
There needs to be some consistency in officiating across the board, because...
And it needs to err on the side of offense. Like, say what you want about the NBA.
Yes.
Their star treatment, sure. And I know that's frustrating when you don't have the star. I totally get it. But you don't have an NBA game that's 72-68 and then another one that's 140-134. Yeah. It may have leaned into offense a little too much, but you know what you're getting, I think, night in and night out, and it's a fun product to watch. That BYU-Duquesne game was not fun to watch.
Brutal game.
Yeah, it's just, I don't want to see constant stoppages and bloody noses and fights. Like, I want to watch offense. I want to see continuous game action. College Hoops has a big officiating problem.
The refs even took away Duquesne's organic celebration. Plan to review, not officially done yet.
I know.
They always insert themselves.
And what'd you think of the Noah Waterman? Clearly a three. They call it a three. Oh, just kidding. It's a two. Wait. We better go back and look at that. I'm like, come on,
I had
you guys.
The DV Sport replay view right in front of me. Right in front of me at courtside at the NCAA tournament. I'm like, what are they looking at? The DV Sport is showing the foot is behind the line. What are you doing? Look, BYU lost the game. I get that. But you want the product on the highest stage. Like, I know it's first round, but you're in the chase for a national title.
Yep.
In that moment, you want the officiating to not insert itself and take over the feel, the flow of the game. Too often, not only in BYU-Duquesne, but so many of these college basketball games, and the product is just infiltrated by refs. They make their voices heard way too much. And all the reviews, is this a flagrant one? Is this an out-of-bounds? So many reviews and stoppages. It's insane, to the point where broadcasters last night on the Friday games, late night in Spokane, for that Grand Canyon St. Mary's game, they're like, oh no, another review. They're even mocking it on the broadcast. So officiating in college basketball has got to get better. It almost made me yearn for a Big 12 officiating crew. Like,
no, it did not make me yearn for that. It made me yearn for a WCC officiating crew.
Oh, boy.
But not a Big 12 officiating crew.
WCC, to their credit, those refs, they did kind of cater a little bit more to offense. They really did.
That's what I want. That's what we want. We want scoring.
Yeah.
Why do you think this BYU team was so beloved? Because they played freely up and down, and they shot a lot of threes, and it was fun to watch. We don't want to watch 64-60. We want the 92-88s. That's fun. That's a good product. This is an entertainment product now. It's no longer just a game.
You don't want Dean Smith four corners anymore?
Dean Smith, look, I'm going to give this man enough respect. I think he would have evolved over time and gotten to the free-flowing offense. There would not have been triangle offense, keep it low scoring. I mean, geez, like, here's the frustrating thing, too. The only time in the game where the refs should set the tone is from the get-go. When someone comes crashing in and gives a bloody nose, give that guy a foul. Huh? Maybe, I don't think it needed to be a flagrant, but say, hey, it's not going to be bully ball today. We're going to play real basketball. You're gonna, like, how many times were BYU guards held off of screens? It's like, mm-hmm. I felt like they were held all game long. That is against the rules. Call it. And if you do that enough early, Duquesne or whoever, Texas Tech, you name it, will adjust, right? BYU, even if they're doing it, they'll adjust. But when you get away with it for 6 minutes, that's how you play, and then you have the crap that we had to watch, 71-67.
The NCAA tournament, even though it has its frustrating moments, it still always delivers an entertaining product. Big 12 conference, BYU was one of three teams in the opening round that lost. Big 12 goes 5-3 in the first round of the NCAA tournament. Do you still feel like the Big 12 is the best league in America after what you saw in the round of 64?
I think they're still the best league in America, but they are not definitively the best league in America this year.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
I think they're certainly in the conversation, but this year, because of the lack of elite teams at the top, I think they're one of the three best leagues with the SEC and the Big East.
SEC looked pretty bad, though, I thought, in the round of 64. Kentucky lost to Oakland. Florida lost to Colorado. Who am I forgetting to? Someone else.
Auburn lost, dude.
Auburn lost to Yale. South Carolina lost to Oregon. SEC, like, okay, you know, right. I know Texas Tech and BYU dropped to double-digit seeds, but still, 6-11s are a little more common than 4-13.
Totally.
And let me pitch this to you. Kentucky, that fan base seems like they want blood. They want Calipari gone.
He's been eliminated three of the last 4 years opening round.
And I totally get it. He does less with more than any coach in college basketball.
Yep.
Kentucky gives him everything he needs, and he kind of controls the narrative, and he kind of almost sometimes gaslights people. It's like, no, dude, you got to hold yourself accountable. You can't lose to Oakland. Oakland had a head coach that was serving up McDonald's in a drive-thru last week. Come on. Up until about 5 years ago, I had no idea Oakland was not in California.
I legitimately thought at the start of the tournament, I'm like, hey, my wife grew up in Fremont, California, which is 15 minutes down the road from Oakland. I'm like, hey, your hometown university, let's go. She's like, oh, I pick Kentucky. I'm like, you can't root against your hometown. And then she's like, I don't remember there being an Oakland University growing up. And I look it up, Oakland, Michigan.
I guarantee. So you were like Vice President Kamala Harris. Kamala Harris, Vice President, she released her bracket and she picked like a heavy lean to California teams. She picked Oakland over Kentucky. I guarantee she thinks it's from California
100%.
Too. Guaranteed. She's like, I got to lean on my contingents.
I'm like, Oakland University, this is awesome. And then after my wife said that, I'm like, wait a minute. I watched, what was that show on Netflix with the community colleges? There's a community college that was featured in Oakland.
Oh.
Where there was the coach who was like, ready, ready.
What is it? Last Chance U?
Yeah, Last Chance U. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. One of the last football ones.
Yes.
The coach is always, ready, ready. Ready, ready. They were from Oakland, and their university was not Oakland University.
Yeah, they were a JUCO, but yeah, that's funny. I didn't know until like a few years, and I feel like we're kind of in the 99 percentile of knowing weird colleges and their mascots.
Yes.
And where they're located. I had no idea. And Kentucky lost to them. Calipari, if he gets canned, Mark Pope, that's his alma mater. Do you think Kentucky maybe kicks the tires on Mark Pope?
No.
Do you think Mark Pope?
I think they'd shop at a higher level.
What about that Washington job, though? We've talked about this before.
That Washington job, I am not touching that job with a 10-foot pole. I think you're asking for pain. You're out of your geological region in which you play. That's become a really hard job in the Big Ten. No, thank you.
You wonder though, Mark Pope losing in the NCAA tournament, does that cool maybe any buzz? I still think Mark Pope's a dang good coach.
I think it does kill it a little bit, and that's okay.
Two losses as a six seed. I mean, it will work for BYU if it kills any momentum of him being linked to jobs. But I do believe Mark Pope feels re-energized by being in the Big 12, being at BYU. And look, he's been very fortunate to be at basically one community for more than a decade. Since he became the BYU assistant coach in 2011, WCC, he's been in Utah County. That's not many coaches in his profession get to say that for 13 years, and that spans three jobs.
Right.
And he's had to be, you know, in the same community. That's pretty cool. And I think that, you know, his daughter is at BYU as an athlete on the tennis team. His wife has deep roots here in Utah. Look, there hasn't been any sort of offer to Mark Pope, but I think he is a trendy name that maybe, you know, Washington, maybe the old Louisville is still open. I know Jeff Borzella from ESPN tossed out his name, and I've shared my thoughts that Louisville job I think is a pretty good job, but still, I think BYU is a great job, and I think that BYU next year can be a better team, and I think there's more resources and commitment to BYU basketball from NIL than people give them credit for, because Mark Pope, he'll work the phones. Like, he acknowledges 40% of his job is raising funds for NIL. He's not going to sit on his hands and just say, well, like, you know, it is what it is. Like, we're BYU. We're not going to play this game. No, he's got to go contend with Bill Self next year. Again, he's got to compete with Kelvin Sampson. He's got to compete with Tommy Lloyd, grab your passport, in Arizona next year. He's got so much battling he's got to do in the Big 12. He's got to level it up. But I feel like BYU has more resources and potential than I think people on the outside look at. They just look at the failures in March Madness and say, yeah, they'll never win. You got to go. You got to move on to another job. But I think Mark Pope sees that, you know, this is a place that he can win big.
Let's take a break. We'll keep going with some hoops on the other side. It's breaking down that tough loss. And where does BYU go next? Stay with us.